Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in middle America, where, yep, it's still definitely winter. I was just telling our guest who will be with me in a moment that it's like 10 degrees below, so it just, I don't know, it hasn't even been weather where I wanted to go out and build a snowman, just cold for so long, but we are very blessed. I think I said a couple of weeks ago that up through Christmas, through the end of the year, actually, we were having unseasonably pretty nice weather. You know, it was in the 40s, which is good for here. And then the new year came in with a roar, and it has just been freezing. I was telling her that it's been so cold, it hasn't even wanted to snow. We've gotten snow all around us, and we've gotten a few inches, but more just ice and brittle, brisk wind and just crazy. But the good news is what are we, halfway through January, so not that long till spring, a day at a time, right? For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We recovery program because it is in the We that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, and thank you so much for being here. We've talked a number of times on the show about trauma. It's in the name of a lot of our injuries, traumatic brain injury. And a lot of us suffered trauma in the course of acquiring that brain injury. And afterward, trying to adjust. So, I don't know, if you live to be, well, I guess there's no age limit on it, but at any age, game-changing events can come along that turn our life upside down, and things aren't the way we planned or the way we wished, and kind of freeze like a deer in the headlights, at least I did, and then went through what I call the tweener stage, where there was a point I became aware that I was never going to be able to go back to exactly where I was before, which had been my hope and my assumption. But ahead of me was the fear of the unknown and not knowing where to go. And for a lot of us listening tonight, we were the fast shuffle through various forms of doctors, and unfortunately, and you guys have heard me say this a lot of time, pill pelting seems to be the number one means of recovery in the traditional medical model. So it's very difficult if that's not the direction you want to go. And again, I'm not saying there aren't some people that don't need medication. There are, and they do. But it is amazing how once we open our hand for the first one, they start multiplying. And a lot of times we kind of wondered, and I'm sure some of you have, why don't I feel better? Why isn't this helping me get to where I want to be? And so we've embarked on our own journeys and met pivotal people in our lives. I call them the lantern keepers, because we get on a path deciding that we're going to move forward, not stay stuck anymore, not go backwards, be in denial or self-medicate, stay in depression and anxiety, because we're here, right? We're here. And so I think, my God wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And so when life on life's terms happens, the assumption for me is that I need to move forward. But sometimes that trauma can really be overwhelming, and our shoulders just aren't broad enough to find the way on our own. But once I made a decision to move forward and got on that path and became open and willing, people were there along the road that were able to shed light on my path and help me continue to keep going forward. And our guest tonight is one of those people. Jennifer Kaufman is the director and producer of the transformational movie, There's Got to Be More to Life, based on a true story of Jen's journey of rising up from terrorism and childhood traumas, where she went from barely surviving to thriving. She's an executive producer of 2 Emmy and Telly Award-winning films, A New Leash on Life, The Canines for Warriors story, and Freedom Isn't Free, The Folds of Honor story. She's an inspirational speaker, best-selling author, award-winning results coach, and the founder of the Rise and Thrive movement. Through transformational movies, Jen is on a mission to inspire, encourage, and empower people to rise despite seemingly impossible situations, transforming their trauma, enabling them to rise and thrive to live their best life. For more, see JenniferKaufman.com and There'sGotToBeMoreToLife.com. Where you will see a trailer for that movie. Now, just before I bring her on, in case you're not by a pen, if you're driving or in your easy chair listening, those of you who are regulars know that I always put the websites in my program notes, and the link is about 50 places all over social media. So wherever you've hit the link, you'll be able to find the website, JenniferKaufman.com, and There'sGotToBeMoreToLife.com. Also, after the show is over, at BrainInjuryRadio.com or on my own website, InAFlash.org. How quickly our lives can change, right? With that, I am going to bring on Jennifer Kaufman. Jennifer, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me, Kim. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So tell me a little bit about, must be exciting. In fact, today I started to watch, must have been last Friday, and I I had to stop. I saw the trailer and I read through the site, and today I actually watched the movie. And so Jennifer's going to tell you a little bit later how you're able to do that. But I really encourage you to watch her movie. There's got to be more to life. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things tonight, and you'll hear the impetus of what got her on the path she's on. But like I was saying before I brought you on, Jennifer, there's, you know, a lot of us try through doctors to get help for our traumas, whether they're a chronic trauma, something that's ongoing, if it's a child abuse, domestic abuse, that kind of thing, or a one-time traumatic event that just really turns us upside down, and you don't really know where to go, you know, not in your right mind, really shaken up, and your experience might be totally different than mine and a lot of the listeners that I visited with. But you know, we've gone to doctors to try to get help with the trauma, and there's only so far that goes in helping restore our sanity in order to get us on a path to get to where we need to go. And perhaps as we talk, you can tell me if you were on the same course of having a realization that you couldn't go back to exactly where you were before. I'm not sure if we ever can when such game-changing events happen, because we can maybe get over the anxiety, get on a new path, and obviously you have, by being able to share your experience, strength, and hope in many different ways and help people find encouragement and hope that they too will be able to move forward and live their best life. But just the doctors in the beginning weren't very helpful to me. Listening to people like you over the years are what I found helpful, because I never took a pill that fixed everything. I wish there was a magic pill that would just fix it all and take it all away. But if anything, you know, for a lot of people comes a second problem, and not a solution at all, but a second issue to have to deal with. And then you've got the trauma to deal with, and all of the self-medicating that's gone on top of it. So you've got to get all of that stripped away, and you're back to scratch with what needed to be worked on in the first place. And it wasn't by medicating it away. It was by a lot of other means. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You didn't wake up a director and a producer of transformational movies. Tell us a little bit about your story and yourself, and bring us up to when you changed your career course, your life course.
Sure. First, I want to start out with I had my first traumatic brain injury in my mid-20s. I was with my family, and we were weekends away skiing, and I fell ice skating, of all things. And I was heavily medicated for pain, anti-inflammatories, and anti-anxiety medications, and I was on that for a number of years. And although it took the edge off, it wasn't the cure. And I actually had to work through, you know, experience and the trauma related to that. And it took many, many years. And so, you know, fast forward, I was 43 years old, and I was, I went to the Boston Marathon for the very first time. And On that particular day, April 15, 2013, is when the first of two explosions went off. And as soon as I knew it was over. And, you know, I gave you the pre-story because, you know, I did have some childhood trauma, and I had some trauma in my mid-20s and my early 30s. And then here we go in my early 40s. And that experience was completely shattering on every level. And I remember distinctly being in the emergency room, overwhelmed with a flood of doctors and nurses coming to my side. And I remember saying how I had such excruciating abdominal pain. And the doctors and nurses were talking as if I wasn't there, saying that I was having, I was having my heart rate was through the roof and I was going to have a heart attack and I didn't know if I was going to die. And, you know, it was just absolutely, you know, chaos. And it was terrifying. And in the midst of that chaos, there was a brief moment of time where things settled down a little bit. A lot of the doctors and nurses had left my room to go check on the test. And I heard this inner voice that said I needed to learn how to heal naturally. I have to understand I had no prior knowledge how to do that. But I believe my previous traumas, where I did medicate and I did, you know, listen to what the doctors and nurses had to say at that time. And I want to be clear. I love doctors and nurses, and I think there is a place for medicine. However, I've come to understand for myself that, you know, one medication led to another, led to another, led to another. Nothing ever was a miracle cure. And I was told that I would likely be on medication for the rest of my life. Let medication actually then make me feel good over time. So I was like, there's got to be a better way. And this is the basis of my film, is there's got to be more to life. And so I've had different traumatic events in my life, and I was always left with, why is this happening? I don't understand. And I'm like, what am I missing? And so in my latest film, I actually share about my journey and how I rose up from a terrorist attack and how I was actually able to heal myself all naturally, which sounds absolutely crazy, I think, to a lot of your listeners, because I never used to believe that was possible until I did it. And you're right. I am now directing and producing Emmy award-winning films, but that was not my path before. I was, you know, a very successful executive in the corporate world in my 20s. And when I had my brain injury in my mid-20s, I was told I would never fully recover from that. Imagine being in your mid-20s, you know, one of the primes of your life, and you're, you know, on the rise of your career, and you have a traumatic brain injury, and you can't feed yourself, you can't bathe yourself, you can barely get yourself to the bathroom, and you have to, you know, rely and depend on others to take care of you. It's a very humbling experience, and I'm sure you know that.
It is. And mine was 35, so just a little bit older, but yeah, I know what you mean, right at the pinnacle of my career. That's what I always say of my looks, my career, you know, my living large, where I thought I wanted to be, exactly where I thought I wanted to be.
Yeah, me too.
And then it stopped. Then that ended.
And that's the thing. It's like, wait a minute here. Like, I don't understand, because you're like, oh my gosh, things are great. And, you know, you're at a point in your life that you think it's like, wow, this is amazing. And then all of a sudden this happens. And it's like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
And so over time, I've come to understand that, you know, that the universe, my God, had a bigger purpose for me. I just didn't see it or know it at the time. And I would have to go on this journey of twists and turns and ups and downs and scary moments to really find a way to rise up, like the phoenix rising up from the ashes. It's here's what I understood for myself. Every moment of every day, we're either slowly dying or we're living our best life. And it's a choice that we each have to make. And there are some days, frankly, I am, just getting by. And then I have to remind myself, wait a minute, I can shift this. And so, having gone through all of that, especially the bombings at the Boston Marathon, I honestly could never imagine that I'd be making transformational films. I'd be speaking all around the world, inspiring, empowering people, that they don't have to be a victim to their trauma, and that as long as they're willing to do the work, that they can rise up. And I create movies and I come and share because if I can do it, anyone can do it. It wasn't easy, and yet it was the most rewarding and fulfilling thing that I've done for myself.
Well, and every one of the things you just said, being a victim to our trauma, I see a lot of that out in society right now, and some of it isn't even a person's personal trauma. It's from generations back. And I, on a totally separate note, I know people that have been through traumas that just have gotten locked into that victim posture. And it isn't self-serving, serving ourselves well. It isn't serving society well. It's not good on relationships. I really got a bad taste in my mouth for being a victim and wanted to turn that around somehow. And, the other thing you said that's honest and true that I've found also is that, when we find these tools and change the course of life, our lives, every day isn't sugar plums and fairy dust for me either. There's days that I struggle. But the difference between now and then is that I do have tools and I do have faith and hope, and I am aware enough to be able to say to myself, self, I guess it's just one of those days. Perhaps a trigger of some kind has happened. I've got a lot of chronic pain from my stuff over the years, and this weather doesn't help. Jennifer's also in a cold area, and I was talking to her about that a little bit before we got on the phone. But, the brittle cold doesn't help a lot of my my pain issues. And so, winter's a difficult time. And then I don't know if you have, it's weird because that was April 15th, right? My brain injury happened on January 13th. And so around this time of year, even though it's been a long time, I mean, it was 1995 and my life is pretty darn good. But, there's this time right after the holidays, all the hustle and bustle of the holidays. And Jesus, this year I was making jokes that from Halloween on, they were having Black Friday. That used to be one day, the day after Thanksgiving, and criminally, the pumpkins came out and it was Black Friday, every Friday until the real Black Friday. And then they were having, Internet Monday from Thanksgiving on, and everything just was going so fast this year. And yet, that undercurrent, everybody's tired, talk about a societal trauma, the COVID has been an undercurrent to everything else that we have in our backpack, you know, of things we take out and look at from time to time that are upsetting to us. And, or, you know, like I say, a trigger comes, like a date and a time. You know, the weather was a lot like this when I was, you know, and it was a real cold day, but I got up and it was a day like any other, and I was feeling good and I was working, and then all of a sudden everything changed. And I just remember it being so cold and the lack of color. My birthday's in the spring, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. Maybe it's just because it's the end of winter, but, and a zest for life, because, you know, when spring comes, all of this lack of color leaves, you know, and color starts coming back and life starts emerging, you know, the little birds in the bird nest and the flowers starting to come up and being able to see the grass and the grass turning green and the leaves coming back. And, you know, that really invigorates me. But post-holidays never really invigorated me anyway, because the beginning of January to me always felt like, oh God, and now we've got to get through the rest of winter. Not when I was younger, but the older I get, you know, the older I get after the holidays and we get to January 1st, I feel a little depressed on New Year's Day. On good years, you know, I'm looking at that as a new beginning, right? And that's what everybody hosts their show on, is a new beginning. And those are really good. But, you know, sometimes in Nebraska, the first means we just got through the exhilaration and the busy, so that you couldn't even have time to think, you know, the busy of the holidays. And now, boom, we've landed on, you know, another 3 months until spring comes. Now what? And so it's just interesting, whatever it is that, I guess my point was, and I lose it sometimes, but I won't blame it on anything, is just that what we do have that we didn't have before is tools. You know, I'm aware that I have a lot of arrows in my quiver that I can use. And you talked about choice earlier. You know, it's my choice if I'm going to use the tools that I've been given and that I've learned to help myself feel better, or I'm just going to let it go for today and feel the way I feel today. But just like there's not a magic pill, there's not one magic tool. It's just that I found that doing it this way, that, you know, the cool thing about these tools is one seems to lead to another, seems to lead to another, and there's a progression, so that there's a lot of things to choose from. But the bottom line is that they all offer hope and faith that no matter what we've been through, it'll be a brighter day. If it's not for whatever reason today, tomorrow, that isn't, I know now, that isn't going to be a permanent state of being, that things will shift when I let it, when I choose it.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to ask you something about the bombing. I know that's not a comfortable subject, but, you know, you got up on a nice day and we're going to go to a marathon, and that obviously, things like car accidents and strokes, things, a lot of the people here, those things happen every day to people, but what happened to you doesn't happen every day to people, especially when you're just going to run in a marathon and something so horrific and out of the blue happens. Did you even know what was going on? What was that like? I mean, you got there probably excited to be there. That's a big event, a cool event, and the fact that you were going to be in it, that had to be all a very up experience. Did you even know what happened?
At first, you know, and you're right, it was actually a very magical day, actually. You know, just imagine you've got, you know, 26.2 miles of people cheering and excited and just like, you know, it was vibrant and alive. And then out of nowhere, this loud explosion. And honestly, at first, my first instincts were it was a gas explosion. It felt like it came out of the building behind me. And then I found myself on the ground. And, you know, can you imagine hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people cheering, happy-go-lucky. And then all of a sudden, when the explosion happened, there was silence, a moment of silence. And I remember distinctly hearing the glass shatter of the building behind me hitting the ground. And then it erupted screams for help, and it was just absolutely horrific. But I honestly thought at first it was a gas explosion. And what happens in these experiences, and this might have happened in your situation, everything seemed to have slowed down. What felt to me like minutes was actually 12 seconds that I later learned. So the first explosion happened, and that's where I was standing, about 15 feet from the first explosion. And then 12 seconds later, a second one went off. When the second one went off, I knew it was a terrorist attack at that point. And I just had to find a way to get out of that situation. I think there's so many challenging things about that experience. But imagine being, at this time, I'm 42 years old. I went to university, both undergrad and grad school in Boston. I worked in Boston for many, many years. Never in a million years would I have imagined that a young man would place two bombs at one of the most iconic marathons in the world. But you just don't think about that.
No, I sure didn't. I can imagine.
It was a game changer for sure. And you talked at the beginning of this show about, you know, you can't go back to the way it was. And that is, for me, that is my absolute truth, you know. But here's what I've come to understand. And for me, I had a lot of, you know, inner reflection time. And here's the irony. Most of my life I've been running from myself and my past traumas because I didn't know how to deal with them properly. Mm-hmm. And here I am, my very first time as a spectator at the marathon, and I'm brought to my knees. And I had to stop running from myself. And I took several years to have to find a way through the pain, through all the different injuries that I had, spinal, brain injury, internal injuries. I had to find my way through all of that. What happened was, it was like I shed a layer, like layers, if that makes sense. Like I had to be able to shed parts of myself in my past, in a good way, kind of like a snake sheds skin and it generates new skin. I feel, from my own experience, that this is what happened, is that, and it prepared me for what was to come next, even though I didn't know what that was. And it created an opening and an awareness, you know, that I had never experienced before. And it got me to rise up and to blossom in whatever way that, you know, that excites me today. But I think that's it, we all have that ability if we choose. And I want to say something around perspective. So for me in this journey, I got curious about, okay, I've had so many different traumas in my life. And I want to be clear, I've had a lot of successes in my life too, right? But I'm like, I just don't understand. Why does this keep happening to me? And when I ask myself that question, it feels very disempowering, like I don't have any power around it. You know, and it's also victim mentality, candidly. It's, you know, it's like, why is this happening to me? What's wrong with me? You know, what am I missing? You know, it's, and so that kind of took me down a path that there wasn't a lot of cheese on, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
So I got myself asking, what if this was happening for me rather than to me?
Well, it's a good way to look at it.
Yeah,
I mean,
but think about it, right?
Really?
You've gone through traumatic.
Yeah, we wouldn't have gone the direction we went, but for those things happening. You'd like to think there would have been an easier way to change our direction, but it had to be something to really get our attention and leave us in a position of not being able to go back. You know, it's not like breaking an arm and, you know, the arm gets set and you're uncomfortable for a period of time and then you go back to life as you knew it. Those things don't get your attention, don't shake you to the core as hard and shut that door. You know, when you talk about when one door closes, others are there to be opened. Well, you don't always believe that, right? When your main door has mm-hmm. closed and you can't even visualize the new doors yet. But yeah, when, anyway, I'm going to shut up and let you finish your point, but I knew exactly what you meant, because when you can't go back, then that is, in fact, something that was done for us, whether I like it or not, you know, like having had to go through those things, okay? I do like the opportunities that have been afforded me that would have never come down the pike for me, weren't even on my chart, didn't even think were in my skill set.
Me too. I never went to film school. I never did any of this stuff before. And it's what came to be. And if I hadn't had this experience, and I say this today, that experience was one of the most horrific experiences of my life. And yet, today I can sit here and tell you it's been the greatest gift of my life. And they're both true statements. One doesn't absolve the other. And you talked at the beginning of this program about adaptation and acceptance. We don't have to like these experiences, trust me. I would never wish what I went through on anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it was the experience I had to go through to have my own awakening, to have my own rebirth, and to have my own, home to myself. You know, that experience helped me over time, and it took several years, but it helped me to integrate the traumas that had happened, not just that one, but the previous one. Because I thought that, you know, those experiences were bad and wrong, and there was shame and guilt and all of that wrapped up in it. And I had to deal with that. I had to heal that. And accept that is just part of who I am. And it actually made me who I am today. And without those really traumatic experiences, I actually wouldn't be where I am today. And so I liken it like this. So, you know, when we plant a seed, we typically use manure. What if trauma is the manure in our lives to help us rise up and blossom?
Yeah.
And that's a perspective change. And that's the key here, is that when I shifted my perspective that life was happening for me rather than to me, I felt empowered. I felt like, oh, okay. You know, it got me curious. It took me down this path of like, you know, well, what do I want to do now? What would living my best life look like? And then beyond my wildest dreams, I didn't say, oh, I'm going to be a filmmaker someday. That's not how it happened. Actually, how it happened was because I had traumatic injury, because I had post-traumatic stress disorder, because I had a lot of other physical, mental, injuries from the bombings alone, I started to become aware over time that on average 22 veterans returning from war commit suicide every day. And they struggle with traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress. And now I had gotten myself to a place where I had risen up from those. Again, it took several years for me to do that, but I did. And I was like, what if I could help them? And I don't have, you know, a military background, but I've always had admiration for our veterans and for those that serve our country and keep us safe. And I was like, well, what if? And an opportunity presented itself where I could produce a Mission for Good film, which was showcasing three veterans' lives who nearly committed suicide because they didn't know how to rise up from their post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury. They were a prisoner to it, and you and I both know what that's like because we have both been there.
Yeah.
And so I was like, if I can pay it forward and help produce a film to create more awareness and, more importantly, help save people's lives, then that's what I want to do. And when that very first film, A New Lease on Life, it was so transformative to me because healing happened on both sides. And I was like, wow, this is magical. And then that took me to the next film. And the next film was showcasing, you know, children and spouses of fallen veterans, you know, who lost their lives in war or to suicide. And here, you know, Folds of Honor creates scholarship programs so that those children and their spouses can go on and better have education so that they can have a better life. So I was drawn to create more awareness around that. And then those two films led me down a path. I didn't have a goal to create a film about my own story back then. That just evolved over time. I realized one of the fastest ways to get messages out in the world is through film. And so that inspired me to take the time to document my own story. And we'll be creating another film soon enough, which is the second part of There's Got to Be More to Life. And the second, you know, second film in the series is There Is More to Life. And we show that there is more. And you can have that too. And so now I feel like my life's mission is to spread my message of hope to make someone else's life better. And I feel the most fulfilled, Kim, that I've ever felt in all my life. I feel the most alive. I feel like I'm on purpose.
Yeah, I get it. And that's beautiful. Jennifer and I have never met before, but it's interesting, some parallels. You know, I agree wholeheartedly with everything you said. The culmination of our experiences, without them coming down the way they did, we wouldn't be who we are today and doing what we're doing. You know, but there was a point, you know, the marathon was yours and my rupture was mine, but I also had prior traumas. And so when I got to that one, you know, and the second one was when I was 28, and I learned a lot. I had a lot of positive takeaways in the kind of things that we're doing. So when the third one came, I'm like, geez, enough already. You know? Every decade you think I need a freaking reminder, you know, and they're more intense each decade? Seriously, I got it already. Are we not seeing that I got it already? I missed the first one. You know, the first decade, I missed that. And I did everything wrong, you know, and learned from that, you know, what you don't want to do. That was the first chapter, what you don't want to do to make your life better, what you want to do to screw it up a lot more, you know, than it was from the trauma, how to compound that trauma. You know, and the second one got a lot of tools and a lot of recovery. And, you know, when the third one came, thought, now this isn't going to happen like every decade, is it? Because, wow, Anyway, the part about the veterans, when I got here, I felt the same. I heard the same thing that you did. And I started doing a lot of shows. I still do a lot of shows with veterans and about blast injuries, veterans, help organizations, survivor stories, or if they didn't, their families, talking about suicide and the effects on the family. And it was interesting because I joined a number of groups on social media and, you know, where I post my shows to this day. But a number of them were veterans groups. And, you know, I'm not a veteran. I'm a member of Daughters of the American Revolution, so I've got a million patriots in my heritage. But and I'm very patriotic, so I was trying to help. And I'm in the brain injury business, you know, and they're right there. You know, we were having our 20-year war, and blast injuries are the hallmark of their conflict, the hallmark injury of their conflict. And so I was having guests on that were veterans, would be my guest, that had veteran help organizations, you know, to help mitigate some of these problems or help people integrate back into society with tools that would make it a successful reintegration. And I had a few people ask me in a couple of these groups I joined if I was a veteran. And I said no. And they said they didn't want me there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't bother to read my program notes. I'm a facilitator, okay? That's what I do. I have a gift of finding people like you and like the people that I found that were very helpful, helping a lot of other veterans in a lot of different ways. Geez, I've been doing this for going into my 12th year of every week doing a show. So that's a lot of people, you know, in that time. And we streamed all 50 states and 49 countries, and the shows go from live to archive. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm going to keep doing the shows that I want to do, but Brain Injury Radio's on 7 nights a week. And I thought, you know, one night I was interviewing this man, and he was, I think James deployed probably 3 or 4 times for maybe Afghanistan and Iraq, and a three-time Purple Heart recipient, Silver Star, and on and on, highly decorated. And I was interviewing him, and I sensed, I get this tap on the shoulder, if you will, when it's time. And I asked him after the show if he was interested in being a host. And on Brain Injury Radio, and I told him that the deal, you know, because of the veteran situation, that I thought it would be great if we had an actual veteran as a host, because he was going to have a credibility that I could never have in that group. And he said yes. So Captain James McCormick, and then he brought his co-host Rich with him, and Rich was Special Forces, also decorated, a little bit older. He was the end of Vietnam and then also fought in this past conflict and became a military historian, which goes well with my liking to do Daughters of the genealogy work and so forth, you know. And so they've been the Friday night hosts now for probably 3 years. And I felt really good about that, what you said about anything I'm doing to help really makes me feel purpose-driven. You know, the fact that James said yes and that he came, I thought, you know, if I can't do it myself, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. You know, I continue to have veteran shows, but I want to have one place every Friday where if it's another veteran or veterans family members and that's where they feel comfortable, then I wanted one of our slots to be that, you know, just for that group of people. And so the opportunities that are afforded are really just incredible, because when I started this I had written a book and I was doing interviews like this, and the guy who owns the network had been doing just on Monday nights. He was not so far out from his brain injury, and he was doing one night a week, and I think that it was cathartic for him. He didn't have a mission statement going in. He was just young enough to know what internet radio was. I didn't. When I wrote that book of mine, I had a transistor. I mean, I had a stereo and I listened to music, but late at night I'd flip on an old transistor radio and listen to Coast to Coast before I went to bed. So when I wrote this book in traditional types of medium, called to do an interview with me, an author interview, you know, I did those, and I never forget James Larkin Smith down in Texas, who was the first time a guy called me and wanted me to do an interview on internet radio. And my background is I had been a financial consultant for 25 years. And so I answered as you would, you know, with confidence. And sure, James, I'd love to do that. When, you know, when is a good time? And then I went into my husband, who is a techie, and I am not. And I said, I have an interview on whatever date. And he said, great. And I said, what's internet radio? And he said, well, we'll figure it out. You know, just because you're a techie, he works for the government, it doesn't mean he knows, you know, he hadn't been listening to internet radio either. But he was much more in a place to be able to figure it out than me. You know, and he did, and I did that first interview, and that was cool. And so by the time Craig, who owns our network, got in touch with me, it's weird how things work, and I'm sure you've had this go on in your life. While I'm writing this book over here in Nebraska, and he's up in Spokane, what he learned in his 2 years of just doing it on Monday night as a cathartic experience, a way for him to talk about what he was going through in his recovery, bad and good, because he, you know, like a lot of people, when we're in that place, we lose marriages, jobs, things. Mm-hmm. And so he was going through a lot of that, where he was not only grieving, you know, what happened with his brain injury, but the losses that went with it. And what he found out blew him away, made him decide, while I'm on the other side of the country, that he thought brain injury radio needed to be 7 nights a week, because his awakening was, geez, I thought it was just me alone with my microphone talking my way through my experience using this as a cathartic tool. Didn't even know that he was doing that, and found out he wasn't the only one. The response was over the top. You know, there's like 2.8 million people a year who have a brain injury, and they all think they're the only one, you know, going mm-hmm. through what they're going through. And so he got a hold of me and told me he had decided to do this 7 nights a week, and would I like to be a host? He had heard my interview, and I said, well, I said, I'm flattered and thank you so much for asking, but I don't have any experience in radio. I didn't know internet radio existed until 3 weeks ago, you know, to be honest with you. And I have no background in radio. I'm not your gal, but thank you. You want a book? You know, I'll send you a book, but I don't think I can help you with the rest. And he was really cool, and he said, okay, yeah, I get it. He said, well, can I ask you something before we go? And I said, sure. And he said, were you an author before you wrote the book? And I said, no. And he said, and you have a brain injury, don't you? And I said, yes. And he said, you're qualified. What night did you want? And I said, Wednesday. And that was like 12 years ago, you know, and I had no idea what I was doing. And then, you know, the thing that happens a lot of times when you volunteer for something and you are capable of doing that function is it becomes yours for freaking ever. I've been our director of operations, I guess, for a decade. He just kind of dropped back. He still does shows, but I mean, he kind of dropped back. And as we had natural attrition, you know, then all of our hosts aren't weekly anymore. Some do once a month and some do twice a week or twice a month. And I'm the one who goes out and recruits, hires and trains all of our hosts on the network. And so it was just amazing, the transformation. Like, so how did you know how to do a film? Had you been filming things before? I know. No. That's what I'm wondering. How did you just decided that would be a good medium for when you, because it was the veteran issue that got you motivated to go a direction, right? And so then you decided film would be a good way to do it. And then what? How did you?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you a quick backstory. So 2012, I had come off my best year in business. All of my clients had record-breaking years, and so did I. So I decided to take a couple months off, and I had been wanting to go to this spa in Mirabel, a Mirabel Spa and Resort in Tucson, Arizona. And I had an opportunity to go in February and dodge the snow in Massachusetts and go to Tucson. And I met a woman there, And this woman, now I was not open at the time or prior to this to what I would call like, you know, mediumship or that kind of stuff. I thought it was weird, frankly, and I didn't know if it was true. But I met this woman, and I really resonated with her. And she actually would later become my coach. But she and I were having this conversation, and she said, you know, someday I see you working with veterans. And I remember looking at her like, excuse me, working with veterans? I said, I absolutely love veterans, but I don't know how I would ever help them or work with them. At this stage in my life, you know, I owned my own company doing business coaching and business consulting work, nothing to do with veterans. And so, you know, found that odd, frankly. But it was 3 years later, after the bomb, you know, the bombings happened a few months later, and 3 years after that, I had been inducted into the National Academy of Bestselling Authors. I was able to write about my story in Jack Canfield's book, Mastering the Art of Success. And I was flown to Hollywood and received an award and inducted into this academy. And there was a success summit. You know, it was a 2-day event. And there was a gentleman that got up and spoke at that event. And he was a veteran. In fact, the movie Black Hawk Down was made after his story. And, yeah, mm-hmm. You know, what are the chances? What are the chances that I actually got to meet him privately? And in that same event, an Emmy Award-winning film director and, founder of DNA Films got up and spoke how they were looking for a certain number of people to produce a film for veterans. I remember sitting in the back of the room sobbing, reminded of what that woman told me 3 years prior. Here's my opportunity. Here's my opportunity to serve and give back. And I had no idea that that's how it was going to be. So I contributed, you know, my money to produce the film. And I, like you, was told that I would never be able to help veterans because I wasn't a veteran myself. And so, but this was the way I could help them. And that actually was what got me, you know, got me to where I'm helping veterans. In fact, right now, we're doing this huge campaign between now and the marathon, the Boston Marathon, which is in spring, around your birthday month, in April. And we're doing for every purchase of the film, so for everyone that comes and watches our transformational film, we are giving $2 back to Operation Shockwave. And Operation Shockwave is a nonprofit organization that serves veterans, and their sole mission is to eradicate suicide amongst our veterans. And so we want to save people's lives. So I've always been determined. And so I have to find another way. And so now, and so to answer your question, no, I didn't have an experience with film. But when I saw using the film New Leash on Life to Can for Warrior Story, was how life-changing it was, not only for everyone involved in making the film, but as it went out into the world. PBS actually picked it up, and it actually streamed over 2,500 networks. It rose to the Canine for Warriors organization. They got more donors and more funders, which meant they could save more veterans' lives. And I saw the power of film. A 90-minute or less film can have in the world. And I thought, wow. And I think, you know, obviously I've written a couple of books myself, and books are a powerful way to get a message out. But I have come to find that film is too. And so, no, I went into it not knowing. But I've been blessed, you know, I put together an amazing team, people who I did not know before, but I felt, I just was guided to Canterbury, and I just trusted that these were the right people who were going to help me share the story and interview, some of my practitioners and healers that helped me on my journey in the film. You know, we ended up, you know, what are the chances? I get to share this quick story with you. We were getting ready to go film in Sedona, Arizona. And about 10 days prior to that, you know, it was a lot of planning, a lot of, you know, we have to get permitting, all this other stuff. About 10 days prior to actually going on location, the incident photographer calls up and says, I can't go. I have a family emergency. And I'm like, excuse me? Like, what am I going to do now? And I went everything from, oh, my gosh, I got a cancel, I got reschedule, which is a huge deal. A huge deal. It would have been a financial, you know, it would have really hurt the budget. And I'm like, what do I do? And so I said to him, can you help me find someone? And I knew I couldn't work with just any sort of photographer. I needed someone who was open enough and who made me feel safe and secure to share my story, because it took a lot of courage for me to come out and share my story. Yes, I'm a very outgoing person, but when it comes to myself and my, you know, my own personal life, I'm very private. But I decided, because I truly want to help save people's lives and I want to make other people's lives better, that I had to be courageous enough to share and be open and vulnerable what my journey has been like. And so we ended up finding one of the cinematographers to Anthony Bourdain. And just so happened he was going to be in the Sedona area the week that we were going to be filming, and he just so happened to be available, and it was just like, okay, here we go. And so, you know, a lot of it is just, you know, it's what I've come to understand is that the more I live in the present moment, and the more that I trust in my God and the divine and the universe, even though I don't know how I'm going to do it, as long as I stay open and as long as I'm clear on my intentions, the right people show up at the right time just when I need it. And it's a whole other level of faith. And again, yeah. It goes back to what's, you know, life is happening for me. You know, I absolutely loved my cinematographer that did all the filming in the beginning. It's unfortunate that he had a, you know, family emergency. And here's the thing, the next gentleman that came in, we were able to go even deeper in the story. And we actually filmed 22 veterans from different branches of the military. And I facilitated this conversation at an alpaca farm. It's quite comical, actually. It's segments of it are in the film. And the whole point was, what's it going to take? What's it going to take for the civilian world to meet the military world, to unite hands and arms and find a way to save more veterans' lives? And to me, it's bridging the gap. What I have found in my own experience, and I know you've experienced this too, is that when we go through a traumatic experience, we want to surround ourselves with others that have gone through a similar experience, because we don't even have to communicate. It's like we have a knowing of what the experience is like, because we've had, even though our experience may be different, we've been in the same situation. So there's a relatability there. Whereas, you know, my family can't relate to my experiences because they haven't experienced them. You know, I can't relate to what it's like to be in the military. I can't, nor do I ever claim to. And, but it doesn't matter. What if we can be the bridge to each other and help each other? Instead of being isolated to our own groups and like, what if we could actually just open up enough with one another? Because together, and you said at the beginning of your show, together, it's the we. Together we rise.
Yes.
And together we thrive.
Right. That's exactly right. I think that bridge you're talking about, and, you know, that's what I was trying to do when I was joining those groups and doing it on my own. But it is funny because I found that too, and you're absolutely right about that was, I think coincidence is God's way of working anonymously, you know, when your original mm-hmm. producer couldn't make it and had the emergency, it's because that person absolutely wasn't the person that was supposed to do that project with you. You know, I mean, I think
exactly.
you got the person that was supposed to do that project with you. And as you said, that person actually got more. And, you know, that's kind of how I felt about, there's certain veterans that come back on my show. I have new ones all the time, but a couple, a guy from SEAL Team 6 and a couple different guys who come back. And here's kind of a funny one for you. I was talking about yoga at one point, and I figured, you know, when you talk about holistic or alternative ways of treatment as, you know, just another arrow in your quiver, guys, you know, a lot of guys, especially back when I did the first interview about it, you know, thought that was a girly, sissy kind of thing to do. And, you know, it didn't take any strength and wouldn't even consider doing such a thing. And so I didn't talk about it, but I was doing, I call it shopping for people. I'll get on LinkedIn and I'm not looking for a job, but I'm reading people's, reading people's bios. And I'll see something that I find of interest that I read, and I reach out to them. And, you know, I don't remember getting told no. I'm sure I probably have at one time or another. But, you know, this is free worldwide advertising, you know, just to call and talk to me. And so, most people come. But anyway, I saw this guy, and I read his bio, and he, really nice-looking guy, very muscular guy, and I can laugh about this and say this because my mom, when I showed her a picture of Mikel Vega, who is going to be a guest on my show, I said, Mom, you got to see this guy. She never had learned how to save a picture to her iPhone, and she learned how to save a picture with his. And I told Mikel that when he came back for an interview. I said, you know, my mom's had your picture, you know, through a couple upgrades in her telephone. But the thing about him is, you know, he was decorated, did some heavy duty, right, and went through PTSD and injuries and served for a long time, and he's this huge guy, and where he found his peace, and he founded a veterans organization called Vital Warrior, and through his travels, he learned Kundalini yoga, and so he talks about breathing and yoga, and I said, that's who I need, because nobody's going to call him a pussy for doing yoga, you know. When they see this guy's picture floating by, you know, at the bottom of my screen, ain't nobody going to be saying, you know, anything. Well, geez, if this guy, you know, finds yoga so healing, you know, maybe this is something I could try, you know. And then it might be their thing or it might not be their thing, but nonetheless, it at least put it on their chart, you know, to hear him talk about it. And it was funny because the second I had him on several years later, he had done something else, I think. Well, you know, part of what he's done, speaking of film, you might want to look him up. I'll have to introduce you guys. He got into a little bit of showbiz to help subsidize Vital Warrior, and he was in a couple of the Transformer movies, and I've got his number in my phone. I don't call and chat or anything like that, but his number is in my phone, and every now and then my husband and I will be watching a show on TV, and I don't know, just pick any old show like a Law and Order SVU or something, whatever it might be. And one of the characters, like the bad guy, will come through, and it's And it's Mikkel, you know, my husband and I will look at each other because, of course, it was a joke for my husband. He had to show my mom how to show the save the picture and all of that. So he knew all about Mikkel. And so, you know, we'll look at each other and go, Mikkel. And one movie we saw him in the credits, it called him Man in Suit. You know, he didn't even have a name. He was a gangster, but he was just Man in Suit. And so I texted him, you know, and I said, hey, Man in Suit, just caught you on TV looking good. And he, you know, he wrote back and LOL'd me. And so I think it was Hawaii Five-0 or something. I'm not sure. But yeah, that's what he was in the credits. I was just, we knew it was him, but I was waiting for the credits to roll, and I'm like, Man in Suit, I don't know. But anyway, he's now apparently, and I'm always a step behind, I'm going to have to go on YouTube. Apparently they have some series now on YouTube. I think they're shorter than they are on TV, and I'm not really even sure how that works, but he's got one going on YouTube now, so I'm going to have to go and check that out. But in any case, to your point, it is interesting when there's people that you need or resources that you need and you're open to it, they do appear, you know, they do come. And, you know, and again, like the second time I had him on, it was actually my birthday. And when he was telling a little bit about his background, he had been in drama in high school, and in the chorus he sang, which I hadn't known that about him from the first time. It was all about military that we were talking. And so this went back a little further. I said, so you sing too, you act and sing? And he said, yes, I sang quite a bit in the old then. I was in a lot of dramas and plays, and I sang. And I said, great, sing to me. And he said, excuse me? I said, birthday, it's my birthday, sing to me. And he only paused for a minute, and he just kind of chuckled like you're doing. And then he sang me happy birthday on the air. I was just so tickled. I had my husband cut that out, and that's on my desktop. So, I mean, it's just really cool, the people that you get to meet and the things that transpire. You know, a lot of people got a hold of Vital Warrior after that and were wanting to try yoga and wanting to meet Mikkel and have caught him in different shows and on some of these. I had posted a couple of the early YouTube things that he put up, and just all of the interesting people over the years. And when Captain James came and I wanted to have a veteran host and happened to have Friday nights open and did that interview with him right when I had an opening for a host and asked him, and he said yes. I had no idea. He's a really busy guy. He is retired from the military now, but he's the president of the Gold Star Families at this point. And he was, I think it was Veterans Day, he was with the president helping lay the wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And so then Rich will take over the show. But they've been as loyal and devoted to their show, you know, to me. They show up. They show up, you know, so to all of their listeners, and they have a ton of them that just like to go. And whether they're talking about a military topic or not, or it's not exactly what I had in my mind, but I don't micromanage my hosts. I just believe that they manifest when I needed them. There was something about them that made me place them. But then it's their deal, what they do, as long as they're not doing something to get us in trouble, you know, where I have to intercede a little bit. But we haven't had anyone like that for a long time. But in any case, the fact that James said, yes, you know, so many, they get so many listeners, and a lot of them, there's just comfort in the fact they're all veterans, whether they're talking about politics or something totally unrelated, you know, to what we would call a veteran affair, you know. And it makes you wonder then that, well, now, wait a minute, when I was having shows on that and trying to talk to them about coming, I wasn't a veteran, so I didn't have the credibility. Now these guys are sitting there shooting the breeze about whatever, you know, it might be, and people are flocking to listen to their other veterans because they're veterans, you know, and so they meet each other, and like you said, they've walked a similar path. And so I do think that is really cool, the way that the right people come when we need them.
And that it's, you know, it does happen. It's just like, you know, you talked about earlier in the show as well, like, you know, there are some days that, you know, they're a bit of a struggle or a bit of a downer. It's no different than when there's a storm that rolls in, right? Like, it just happens. It's part of life. And but we know that the sun is, and the light's always going to return. And so, you know, we can understand that, you know, sometimes, at least for me, you know, if I'm feeling hopeless or feeling scared, I just have to remind myself that this too shall pass, and that the right, you know, next thing is going to emerge. And sometimes I just need to pause, and which is not an easy thing for me. I'm a pretty impatient person. So to pause and to slow down has been my greatest challenge and yet greatest reward. I do yoga, I do Pilates, because that actually helps me to slow me down. It actually helps me to stay more in the present moment. And when the more I am in the present moment, in this now moment, I'm aware of everything I need is right here around me. But if I project too much into the future or reflect too much in the past, then I'm likely to miss what's right here in front of me now.
Yes, that's absolutely true. I say if you've got one foot in the past and one foot in the future, you don't have a leg to stand on today. So, I mean, not that you never have to plan ahead, it's just that you're not guaranteed. And so, you know, I have a tendency to get, and I really haven't liked this COVID. You know, I have underlying conditions. My folks are aging. My dad has Parkinson's, and you know, this has been a long couple of years, you know, of changes. And in fact, last week, there's two times a month where I decided, you know, have you ever done the practice what you preach thing? I had a couple of hosts that I liked them really well as people. I like them. I like them all. I like everybody for a certain amount of time. No, wait, let me figure out the way I want to frame this. I suggested to a couple of people that they might want to find a co-host to spice up their show, give it a little punch, a little dynamic that hadn't been there before and that we all need to change up from time to time. Now, I had done that in the beginning of my time doing this. I would think of a topic and I would just talk for 2 hours, not a problem, I guess. And, you know, I would do that, use third-party pieces and my own opinions, which I'm never short of, and I would do that. And then I started interviewing because I noticed a lot of most of our hosts didn't interview. And I realized, and this was another thing, and you probably noticed this too, while we did learn new things that we never thought, you know, had no prior experience and never envisioned ourselves doing, I thought right after my injury that I had burned my skill set. Well, I hadn't burned my skill set. I burned it in the application it was being used in and that I was used to. But when it came to, when I got here, and I'm embarrassed to say it took me several years for the light bulb to go on, that this shopping for people I was doing for LinkedIn and calling them up and asking them if they wanted to be on the show and then interviewing like what we're doing and those kind of things, that wasn't so much different than what I did in my career, except it was even more, you know, when you're trying to sell people stuff, you get no's, you know, a lot more no's, you know, between the yeses. I thought, geez, you know, this is a piece of cake, you know, calling these people, you know, because I'm sincerely interested in what they're doing, or I wouldn't be reaching out, you know what I mean? They don't even know I'm looking at them until I've seen something that has really got me sincerely interested, and I'd love to hear more, you know, and so I see if they want to come on. And then the conversations, people selling, you know, whatever we're doing, we're interacting. If they don't like us, they're probably not going to watch our movie, listen to our show, read our book, whatever, you know, if they have an opportunity to hear us somewhere and they really thought we were arrogant and put offish, or they just got a bad vibe or whatever, you know, they're probably not going to go any further down the road with us. And so I realized then that a lot of our hosts simply had call reluctance, like the agents I used to recruit, hire, and train. They took it personally to hear no. Well, you know, to me, no has always just been the stepping stone to yes. You know, you know, back in the day, I'd hear the no and say, thank you very much. I'll check back with you again in the future. Bye, and dial the next number. And that was it. Didn't even think about it. And I, you know, of course, I realize not everyone is the same, but I didn't realize for a minute there how devastated and personally people will take a no, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have a lot of hosts that were interviewing, and I wasn't afraid to do that, so I just decided I would. And then after more years, when I suggested that some get a co-host, I thought, well, you know, maybe it's time I'll mix my show up again a little, and I'll get a couple co-hosts on the second Tuesday of each month and the fourth Tuesday of each month. And they too came from being guests that I interviewed, and I tried to give them their own shows, but they didn't want them. And so I suggested the co-hosting with me once a month, and they agreed to do that. In fact, one of them was a producer before he had his car accident. He doesn't do that now. He was an attorney and a producer. I think he produced, is it Look Who's Talking, the movie with John Travolta, I think. Simon.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago, but Simon hails from England, and so he's got that flair of European, right? I thought that was good, and the guy-girl dynamic. So I asked Simon, he said yes, and then the next, Karen was on last week with me, and she told me before the show, and for the listeners, I'll make this brief, but she said she and her boys had been sick, and her husband, the whole house, had been sick for a few days. And, you know, we've talked about COVID on various shows. I have. And I just didn't say anything except that I had found out something about some treatments that worked in the beginning of COVID, don't work on this variant. And I made a comment about how hard it was to get these home testing kits or whatever. And she mentioned that she and her family had gone the day before to get a COVID test, but she was sure that wasn't what it was because they had been so careful. And we went on to do our show, and it was the first show in January, and we just did it on basics, went over what different parts of the brain do and did a little anatomy lesson, started at the beginning. And when we got off the show, she texted me and everyone in her and her two boys and her husband tested positive for COVID. And I couldn't believe it. I wrote to her. I think that they're doing better, but it was really weird because my husband's daughter, her husband, and between them, they have five kids, all got it that week. My cousin in California, her daughter, son-in-law, and their eight-year-old got it that week. And then I have my show and my host and her family wind up getting it. And I was just talking about, we talk a lot about trauma here and, this COVID for a couple of years. A lot of people have got COVID fatigue. In the beginning, most of us didn't know anybody who had it, and it was just an abstract, weird thing, like any of these things we're talking about that have happened. It's something you're not expecting that changes, but this is collectively changing. That day in Boston, it changed life for everybody who was there at the marathon. COVID is kind of changing everything on some level, whether people are ignoring it completely and going on about their life the way they were before, or they're more cautious, like Gary and I are, or wherever a person falls in between. It's traumatic. And at this point, 2 years into it, I don't know about everybody else, but I know a lot of people who have died from it, let alone had it, and even some who are going to be disabled for life. And I heard a guy on the news the other night saying that there was no such thing as long haulers syndrome. And I don't know what kind of an expert he thought he was, but I could give him a couple numbers. of people the virus attacked, parts of them. And as a matter of fact, one of them, I talked earlier about the guy who owns the network. He was under label with Sony at one time. He has a band, and that's how he funds us, part of how he funds us, and was with their tours. And there are three of them, and they've been together 15 years through two different names. A debacle happened with Sony. They left Sony. They went independent, changed their name slightly, and went on. Same three people. And, of course, COVID took away touring. And, when songs cost, when I was growing up, you had to buy the whole album, right? You liked two songs, but you had to buy the whole album, remember? And the albums were getting to be 12 or 15 bucks. They started out at $7 or whatever they were, and at the end they were getting up there pretty high for that two songs. And geez, now you go on any of these deals and they're $1.69, and the artist gets 60% and Amazon or iTunes gets 40%, and 60% of $1.69 to pay all the band members, all the producers, the studio, all the costs associated, you know, with putting the music together. It's obviously, you know, for people who write books these days and indies, you know, it's the touring that you do that you know, is where you make the money. So it's been tough for him the last couple of years. And his longtime guitarist died last year, 33 years old, of respiratory failure from COVID. I know. I've been saying that for 2 years. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. And so I found the revisiting of those and why it was really refreshing to see your movie. And again, I just want to say, because we've got a little less than a half hour, if anybody came in late, my guest tonight is Jennifer Kaufman, and she's the director and producer. Excuse me, I got frog. Let's see that cold Nebraska weather. Transformational movie, There's Got to Be More to Life. But I encourage you to check out her website, jenniferkaufman.com, and a second website, there'sgottobemoretolife.com. And you can find those two websites written down in my program notes at braininjuryradio.com or at my own website, inaflash.org. That's how quickly your life can change, right? Inaflash.org. And if you just click on the link, it'll give a show description, and both of those websites will be there. You can see a trailer for the movie. You can see the online courses, and you can see the books. There's Shattered, Be Courageous, I think was one, Mastering the Art of Success. And Jennifer also does coaching, and she's available for speaking. Engagements was the word I couldn't find. I'm going agreements. No. Engagements. And actually, I was focusing on your courses. I just flipped to that page. Indestructible, 5 steps to conquering paralyzing fears. And that has a bonus video and audio recording of the live event. And so, you know, something like that, for those of you out there that are struggling, whether you're new to the brain injury community or just going through something for the first time or reliving, I talked earlier about triggers and some of the stuff that's been going on with COVID, whether it's the 24/7 news cycle or someone you know or you have had your life turned upside down because of COVID, or it's just been the undercurrent to everything else that's going on in your life. It is exhausting to go through, you know, getting a grip on our fears and our trauma and the changes that we have going on in our life when there's an undercurrent that's kind of making everybody some way, you know, trepidation or fear or anger, you know, now that you can't really hear, you know, you can talk to 5 people and hear 5 different things. It's gotten to be frustrating. You know, hopes we had, like when the vaccine came out, that was going to be the end of it. And it turned out that wasn't the case, you know, and that was, what, a year and a half into it, you know, mm-hmm. And now we're going into the third year of it. So, you know, again, messages like this, it's even more important as far as I'm concerned at any time to be prepared for when those roadblocks get thrown up in front of you in your life, to have some tools on hand before you need them is a really good thing. And I will say that when I made the comment earlier, for those of you that were here, when I said in the third decade when one happened, I said, geez, you know what? What already? You know, is this going to happen every decade? I will say that between 2 and 3, I did have tools, and Jennifer made the good point that things that happened, talked about a difference in perception. Things that happen often don't happen to us, they happen for us. And I agree with that. And my point was just that with this undercurrent of COVID, between number 2 and number 3, I did say that I made a lot of progress and I got tools to use after number 2. And I will say that the tools I picked up in that second chapter helped me live through the third chapter and bought me the time I needed to get the rest of the tools I needed to get through that trauma. Had that second traumatic time not happened, I would have gone into that third one with no tools, and I'm not sure I would have made it. And so to be armed ahead of time with a little something instead of leaving everything to chance and to the wind and I'll think about it when the time comes, is this isn't a punishment. Growing is a good thing. Being empowered is a good thing. Saying, you know, something might happen to victimize me, but I'm not going to live as a victim as long as I'm drawing a breath. You know, I'm going to move forward. That's where my heart and soul are, where my faith is. I've heard messages of hope. I've seen other people do it. That, you know, times like these are an even better time to immerse yourself in messages like Jennifer's and all the positivity and inspirational, transformational things that you can. And Jennifer said earlier, this too shall pass. It will, but it's like anything else, when it doesn't happen on our schedule, you also brought up patience, for those of us that lack it. You know, when there's not when we're not exactly able to see the light at the end of the tunnel yet, or what that answer will be, or because of the false starts, you know, the things that we thought were going to be the answer that weren't, those are the kind of things that can shake our faith. And, you know, if you got 5 different things going on, it's even, you know, I remember your breaking glass, the shattered, and it's even more so, you know, the more you have a big thing like that, that's game changer enough. And other people have got things going on now or in the last 2 years that they've been experiencing on top of everything that's gone with the pandemic being here. Like you wouldn't have even been able to get in the hospital at certain times, or you would have been laying in a gurney in the hallway for hours. You know, before and when and if they were able to get you a room. And so, you know, now it's important as ever to be plugged into the solutions and not the problems. You know, certainly be advised of what's going on out there in the world, but shut the TV off and turn on music that makes you feel good. Get involved in, like, watching the movie, There's Got to Be More Than Life, engaging in courses or coaching. A lot of the things you'll see on Jennifer's site whether it's Jennifer, and I hope it is, or whatever it is that you find, just to make up your mind that you're going to do something good for you, because self-soothing is really important right now. The deeper we go, you know, into this, the longer we go into this, we've got a new year going, but, you know, it doesn't feel like a lot has changed, at least at TV anyway. Not a lot has changed, you know, there's still a lot of division. I'm hoping that changes. And again, that's going to be a bridge, like you talked about, where our own individual biases are going to go second instead of first. When mm-hmm. people see that it's more important to be united, there's a reason why we were the United States. It was because we weren't all divided, you know, when they mm-hmm. named us. You know, we were united in a common cause. And, you know, hopefully that's getting through this pandemic and having better relations with people, because everybody's experiencing now how quickly your life can change, whether you've had other traumas in your life or you go on to have traumas in your life. This last couple of years has been traumatic, whether you've experienced it yourself by having it yourself, losing someone, knowing someone who's had a rough time going through it, or just hearing so much about it. It's hard to escape that it's a very good time to indulge. And like I said, I think all the time is a good time to keep growing, as long as we're drawing a breath, that we continue to grow and continue to learn and continue to help others, because our strength and empowerment, I think a lot comes from what we put out. You know, whatever we're putting out is kind of what we're drawing back. And
I totally agree.
So this is a very good time to check out. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing? I really appreciate you being here tonight, Jennifer, and it's really been a pleasure to have you and get a chance to visit with you. And I'm in, and it's amazing some of the parallels, you know, that you find when you're me and you get the opportunity to interview people, and there's similarities. You know, when I was first reading, you know, I've never been through anything like the Boston Marathon before, and yet as we sat here and spoke, we have a lot of things in common. And those are the bridges, if we look for them, that I think are there for most of us. But a lot of times we're looking for the differences and not the similarities, out there on a societal level anyway.
I think that's what's going to bring us back together and unite us. If we can actually put aside, you know, our experiences are different, and yet we have a lot in common in what is on the other side of those traumatic experiences. You go through a grieving process. You go through, you know, a terrible fear. Yeah, I mean, there's all these things that happen, right? And you know, somebody said to me once, like, you've probably had the worst traumatic experience there is. And I said, that's not true. Everybody on the planet has experienced trauma. Everyone of some sort. And so, and their trauma is no less, it's not less than, or does that make sense? Like, it was traumatic. Losing a job is traumatic for people. Losing a loved one, getting divorced, having a brain injury, living through a terrorist attack, it's all traumatic. It's not better than or less than. And when we stop comparing our experiences and actually delve deeper, to really understand, get to know each other. At the end of the day, we all want to be connected, and we all want to love one another. And I think that's, I think when we can get ourselves to that point, is we will rise up from the pandemic, and we will find a way to unite again. But it starts within ourselves, and
yes,
and then from that it ripples out, and that we could be united within our soul, and then within ourselves, and then extend it to those around us. And I want to say that, you know, I used to think, like, maybe someday there'll never be bad things that happen or bad things that happened. And I've come to understand that that's not reality, actually, because we live in a world of polarity. There's contrast. Mm-hmm. Without contrast, we don't know expansion and growth. And so we as human beings, we tend to get in our comfort zone. We tend to stay stagnant because it's just, like, it's predictable, right? And these things happen to shake us up, to get us to rise up to our next version of ourselves. And so you know, I remember one of my meditation teachers said to me about 6 months after the bombing, she said to me, "Someday you're going to see this as the greatest gift of your life." I remember being so upset. I'm like, do you even have a clue what I've been through? And yet, I had such respect for this woman. I had been, you know, doing meditation with her for a number of years. And so I knew she wouldn't say it to hurt me. But she planted a seed that day. And I ruminated on that seed, actually, for days and weeks to follow. And it led me down a path. And I like to use this analogy now, is that what if we actually look for the good of what's happening in the COVID situation, in our own experiences, you know, that are traumatic? What if we look for the good in it? And I remember, it, and for me, it's like going on a treasure hunt, right? You don't find the gold at the surface. It's rare to find the gold at the surface. You actually have to go through, you know, the dirt, the muck, and the rocks, and all of that to find it. Well, what if you had to do that? When you look at these traumatic experiences, what if you look for the good? And I remember when I started to ask myself that question, I didn't come up with anything other than the bad, all the things I lost, right? And that's what came to the surface first. And then when I would ask myself, what good now? I'd get nothing. But I never gave up on asking myself that question. And I eventually got to see, oh, my God, these amazing strangers wrote each of us letters praying for us, telling us to not give up, and telling us that they loved us. Like, who are these people? I don't even know them. Then, you know, they would have these quilt circles all around the country. And then for Christmas that year, we were gifted with handmade quilts made from muff. It actually makes me cry now. I'm just touched.
Wow.
That's who we are. That's our humanity. And that's what we can come back to. So I want to leave your viewers with this. Yes, these things happen in life. And start to look at it that it's happening for you, rather than to you, and that surround yourself with people that are supportive and uplifting and encouraging, because it will help you on your path and it will help you get to a better place faster.
Thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate
you
being on
tonight.
Thank you, Kim. And I want to thank Judy Miller, don't I? Did Judy introduced us? So
yes.
Thank you, Judy, if you're out there listening. I really, really appreciate it. Also a wonderful guest and perfect. perfect that she introduced us. So thank you for being here. Stay safe and keep up the good work. And I hope we can talk again.
Me too. Thank you. And wishing you warmth and sunny days.
Yes. Thank you. And you too. Good night.
Take care. Good night.
Okay, everybody, that was Jennifer Kaufman. Again, you can find her website at jenniferkaufman.com, and there's got to be more to life.com. I'm going to close the show tonight with our sponsor is TBI Survivor Network, VR Insane. It's a website, T-H-E-E, the letter R, Insane, VRinsane.com. is the band, and if you go to the site, there's a lot of music to listen to. And if you want to support us, we do take donations. You can get a hold of Craig or I through social media if you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation, or if you'd like to just go to the site and maybe buy a few songs that you like. It all helps support us. I'm going to close with, gee, I've got a lot of favorites here, but this is something I think we all need. So I'm going to close with this song. Good night and God bless, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Contemplate about the things I do. Well, I can't seem to recognize. Why can't I see beyond these eyes? And I think I need a savior like you. One who talks to me. Someone who sees everything I see. Yeah. like you.